underwriters, or volunteers. And I want you to stay tuned. We have important guests in the studio today. I'm just going to start off with a little music from David Rovix. I've been starting the show with this song for a while. Things can change, and that's what we have to know and believe in and work for. Here you go.
Or not, come on. 1, 2, 3, 4. First you have to have a problem. That part isn't hard. The second step is everybody realizing they're like you. They're holding the same card. Step three is finding there's a tactic when everyone believes it could be true. That if all the people work collectively, there just might be something we can do, and everything can change so quick.
So quick. And it will be so. And so I have in the studio with me two friends that I believe are going to really give you an important show today. Diane Suzuki and Ann Palifka are with me, and we'll start with them in a minute, but I had a couple of things I wanted to say first. My first guest was supposed to be Bob Trausch. Was talking about CHAT, Chico Housing Action Team, and this is Chico Housing Action Team is something that Bob helped found and that he is on the board of directors for and has devoted his life to for all these many years since CHAT was founded. And he's not able to be here today because of a family tragedy. And our love goes out to him today. And I'm just so sorry. I wanted to introduce, too, the idea that you should always spend your pancakes with your Easter and your pancakes with us at the Pancakes for CHAT. It used to be Pancakes for Peace, so we just kind of moved everybody, all the wonderful peace activists, into Pancakes for CHAT because it's all part of the same thing. It's Easter Sunday, April 9th, from 8th to noon. There'll be an Easter egg hunt at 10:30. There'll be organic food. Silent auction, reasonable prices, and all-you-can-eat pancakes. And the tickets are available at the door and online, and the website for Chico Housing Action Team is ChicoHousingActionTeam.net. So you can go there if you want to pay in advance. Anyway, it's at the Card Center, which is at 545 Valombrosa Avenue. So I always like to get there early because it gets to be a line, but anytime you want, Easter Sunday morning, 8 to noon, help support CHAT in every way you can because they're doing such important work. And hopefully my co-host will get him on in the next 2 weeks, and they'll talk more about this and the work of CHAT. So on Thursday, Democracy Now! Covered the shocking killing of Ivo Otieno inside a hospital in Virginia. And there was, speaking for his family, was civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who represents Otieno's family. Surveillance video showed 7 sheriff's deputies and 3 hospital workers violently pinning Otieno to the floor and piling on him for more than 11 minutes, suffocating him. Otieno was having a mental health crisis, and this business of mental health is one that I would like to address more completely in the future. But Crump said, the attorney said, it is too often a death sentence for black people in police encounters. What happened to Ivo isn't an isolated incident in America, Crump said. And here in Chico, we just passed the 6-year observance of the murder by police of Desmond Phillips. He was a young man who was killed by Chico police on March 17, 2017. His father called the ambulance to help assist him with his son's mental health crisis. Instead of defusing the situation or getting help from trained crisis mental health professionals, the Chico police tased Desmond and then opened fire on him. Several of the bullets entered the head, neck, and chest of Desmond, killing him instantly. They then handcuffed his body and took him to a nearby hospital. The original sagas, the officials that officers and individuals told investigators about Desmond's actions turned out to be so different as to be mutually impossible. So the DA, Ramsey, brought them all together to get their story straight. According to Seth Stroughton, a national expert on police use of force, no competent law enforcement official would allow, let alone encourage, people who were supposedly being investigated in a homicide to collaborate on their testimony. There was no video, and the family never had the financial support to hire a forensics team or a lawyer like Ben Crump, so they continue to demand justice for Desmond and for all other victims of police violence. And that brings us to our topic today and my honored guests, who are Diane Suzuki and Ann Polifka. Can you please, both of you, tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Hi, I'm Diane Suzuki, and I'm one of the founding members. CC4J, Concerned Community for Justice, began in May of 2017 after Desmond Phillips' death and Tyler Rushing's death, and subsequently also Stephen Vest.
Yeah.
Since we've been doing this work.
Yeah. And Ann?
Yes, I'm Ann Polifka, and I've been involved with CC4J in the last 3 years, pretty active, actually. And it's important to me because I've seen in my own family the effects of overuse of force on the part of local law enforcement, and it hurts, and it shouldn't have to be this way. I'm glad to be on the show, Chris. Thanks for having us.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to ask you more about the founding. You mentioned 2017 is the founding after Desmond's murder.
And Tyler Rushing's as well.
And then Tyler Rushing's in short order.
Months later.
Can you tell us more about that? That terrible year and the founding of this organization and a little bit about, you know, all the way through 2020, which is when Stephen Vest was killed,
mm-hmm.
Some of what you've been doing in those years.
Well, during those years, we came up with some focus points. I didn't bring them all, but, it's focused around the use of force, the excessive use of force that policing around this country exhibits, including the Chico police. We're trying to stay focused on the Chico Police Department because it's just too much to do the whole county. At first we tried to, and we keep track of some of the cases, but we just can't take care of all of it. But also, as the nation is aware of, you know, this ongoing problem, which includes racial implicit bias, you know, underneath all of that. So that's another point that we advocate for de-escalation and implicit bias training. And those are our main focuses. And then our ultimate goal is to have some kind of oversight or, what's the other word?
Community Oversight Board, Police Accountability.
Police Accountability Board. Review Board. Mm-hmm. That's a citizen, mm-hmm. made up of citizens. You know, the city council is the oversight of the police department, but we'd like to see a separate independent review board. Because the city council has a lot on their plate, and so this would be focused just on policing.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty emotional this morning, so I'm going to just say that when Diane mentions the county, situation in Butte County is just as bad, and what brings the county murders and the city murders together is the district attorney who continues to exonerate police for the murders. So I just want to say their names. Andrew Thomas, 2015, Gabe Sanchez, 2015, then Desmond Phillips and Tyler Rushing in 2017, as well as Mark Jensen. In 2018, Larry, I can't read my writing, Sloridic, Myra Michelizio, G.D. Hendricks, and then 2019, Richard Moulton, and then 2020, Stephen Vest, and then most recently, in January of this year, Butaris Rubio, I'm sorry, from Gridley.
Baltazar, yeah.
Thank you. I can't read my writing. So, Anne, were you going to say something? Go ahead.
I was just going to comment that, right, Chris, you're right on for the last 8 years who's been killed by Butte County law enforcement. But since the DA, Mike Ramsey, has been in charge here in Butte County, there's been more like 37 officer-involved killings in Butte County in his 34 years, the longest running DA in California. So we look at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I got actually involved before the founding of CC4J, Lavelle Proctor, I don't know if you remember his death, he had been leading the police and sheriffs on chases, you know, and so they just decided to go to his house and they just shot him dead at his house as he was trying to get into his car. Mm. It was, and that's when it sounded the alarm for me in 2000. Mm. So I was glad to, that's why I jumped in just readily.
Yeah.
When it, 17 years later.
Right. Yeah, we're still, it's still the same. So, you know, the reason that we were going to be together today, and we, at that time we just had half an hour to talk, but we wanted to talk about the militarization of police, which adds to this culture of violence in terms of, you know, how the military is trained, what their purpose is, what their, you know, how they see themselves, you know, the whole culture. And as police are militarized, we move away from our goals for nonviolent solutions to conflict and crime and more into this sort of overuse of force. And so do you want to maybe set the scene for us about my original questions had to do with the program itself, with the background of military dumping into American cities, and also maybe if you have any information about training of police departments in militarism, basically. Mm-hmm. Diane, could you address mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I'll start with the background, and then Ann and I can cover locally at the police academy. Well, I found part of the answer to this about the dumping from the Department of Defense. I just Googled it because I didn't really know it off the top of my head. And it didn't specify when the program started, but then I also found a Chico News and Review article that states that the practice started decades ago, becoming common in the mid-2000s with equipment returning from combat in Iraq and Afghanistan in the wake of 9/11. And then more from their site, the Department of Defense disposes of obsolete or unneeded excess property turned in by the U.S. military units around the world, and I would say most likely so they can replenish their new equipment and offload this, as they say themselves, that it's obsolete equipment. It's like, it's not, you know, in workable fashion, I think, anyway. So they rearrange, and I'm reading again from the defense site, Department of Defense. They range from military equipment and vehicles to office furniture, computers, medical items, and shop equipment. The 1033 program, which is what this is, transfers defense material to federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies from 49 states and 4 U.S. territories. There are about 8,200 agencies participating, and Chico is one of them. An agency applies to the state coordinator and signs a memorandum of agreement to participate. So this is the process. And then also law enforcement agencies don't pay for the property but must pay for shipping and storage. All excess Department of Defense property is shipped as is, and the law enforcement agency is responsible for all costs associated with repair and maintenance. So this all points to the obvious outcome of this process as the militarization of our local police. They're getting these materials offloaded to them, and they seem to readily accept them. And maybe there are many law enforcement agencies that don't, but it seems like 8,200 are quite a bit. And so we, as the community, didn't have a say on if we wanted to have this military equipment in our town or not. And then some other articles I've read said some sources say that the agencies must deploy it at least once within a year. I mean, I'll find those articles, but I didn't find, anyway, references. And so this, of course, is worrisome because that encourages the police to use the weapons even when it's unnecessary because they've got to use it within that year. So this is most disturbing. And response against police militarization after Ferguson, this is just another note. The Obama administration ordered a comprehensive review of policies that supplied local police departments with military-grade equipment and stopped the flow of such equipment as tanks and grenade launchers to the police. But then when Trump got into office, he revoked that executive order, and we saw that evidence in Ferguson and also with the George Floyd protests. The nonviolent protests.
Right. Yeah, that. So this dumping, it's called the 1033 program, and it's pretty much been formalized since 1996, and they send out $7 billion worth of retired military equipment to 10,000 jurisdictions in the United States. And not only does this cause this militarization in our communities, but it gives the military the reason to go to Congress and ask for, go poor me, I need equipment, because they don't have any equipment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is a vicious, vicious circle.
They just want they want upgraded material.
Yeah, and more of it all the time.
Yeah.
And the new budget reflects that, mm-hmm. As we pivot toward China now, they're using China as an excuse, as if we could go to war with China, as if that's even remotely feasible. So I wanted to appreciate that explanation. And this program could be abolished by President Biden, though, is what I read. He could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is that a pressure point that you all are thinking about at all, or is it just something that my pie-in-the-sky mind works on?
Well, again, we're such a small group doing a lot of the work that we can only focus on Chico right now. We can do, And
that's
and
enough.
We'll be explaining why we're so hyper-focused right now is because this annual review report's coming up.
Well, let's get deeper into this. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the program itself on the national level. What is Chico's history of accepting and accessing this military equipment, Diane?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I couldn't find exactly when Chico PD did accept all this. You said, the program started in 1996. I am not sure how long they've had it.
Mm.
But I can give you what's in the Military Equipment Use Policy 709.
Okay.
And just give you an idea what's in it. And I can't even name all of it, but I will name some of it. We have unmanned, remotely piloted, powered aerial and ground vehicles. We've got what they're called the MRAPs, mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicles or armored personnel carriers. We've got the high-mobility, multi-purpose wheeled vehicles, 1.5-ton trucks, 5-ton trucks, wheeled vehicles that have a breaching or entry apparatus attached. We've got tracked armored vehicles that provide ballistic protection to their occupants. Command and control vehicles that are either built or modified to facilitate the operational control and direction of public safety units, weaponized aircraft, vessels, vehicles, firearm accessories that are designed to launch explosive projectiles, noise flash diversionary devices, and explosive breaching tools. And just recently they've accepted drones, and of course there are assault rifles, and you have some more on that list?
Well, that covers it pretty well.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, excuse me. I want to back announce who you're hearing, whose voices you're hearing. We have Diane Suzuki and Ann Polifka from Concerned Citizens for Justice with me in the studio. Bob Trausch wasn't able to be with us today due to a tragedy in his family. I want to let you all know that you're listening to KZFR Community Radio. We'll take a break in a minute, but I wanted to ask you, Ann Polifka, about this legislation. Last year, there was state legislation that made it necessary for communities to develop policies. And can you tell us about a little bit about that legislation and regarding the acquisition of military equipment?
Yes, Chris, thanks for asking about this. California Assembly Bill 481 was signed into law in September of 2021. And the bill requires a law enforcement agency, like the city police department or county sheriff's office, like here in Chico, to obtain approval of the applicable governing body, which would be city council in the case of the city, or the county board of supervisors in the case of the sheriffs in the county. They have to adopt a military equipment use policy by ordinance at a regular open meeting prior to taking certain actions related to the funding, acquisition, or use of military equipment, and for continued use as well. So what that means in plain language is, in terms of the city police, that they need to come up with a military equipment use policy, which they have. It's Lexapol Policy 709. And then they have to go to the city council and see if the city council approves the policy. So the bill allows the governing body, who's the city council, again in Chico, to approve the funding, the acquisition, and the use of military equipment, but only if it meets certain specified standards. The bill also requires the council to annually review the ordinance and either disapprove a renewal of authorization for a particular type of military equipment or amend the military equipment use policy if it determines, based on the annual military equipment report prepared by the police department, that the military equipment does not comply with standards for approval. So a lot of the weight is on the city council to approve or disapprove the report and the policies. These are the standards. The military equipment has to be necessary because there is no reasonable alternative that can achieve the same objective of officer and civilian safety. The proposed military equipment use policy will safeguard the public's welfare, safety, civil rights, and civil liberties. And if purchasing the equipment is reasonably cost-effective compared to available alternatives that can achieve the same objective of officer and civilian safety. So that's directly from the law, AB 481. We're part of Concerned Citizens for Justice. We work for police. Concerned Community for Justice. Thanks, Diane. Yeah, it's changed in the last year. Anyway, we believe that the military equipment is neither necessary or cost-effective and find that the use policy is highly inadequate to the task of safeguarding the public's welfare, rights, and liberties. And we do want to know, and we will be asking, how City Council determined that the Chico PD military equipment is necessary and cost-effective and will safeguard the public's welfare, civil rights, and civil liberties. So again, a good quote from AB 481. In order to facilitate public participation, any proposed or final military equipment use policy shall be made publicly available on the internet website of the relevant law enforcement agency for as long as the military equipment is available for use. And in the last year, actually, California communities like Richmond, California, have used the new state law to advocate for demilitarization. It's kind of exciting to me, actually. Richmond, California, by Berkeley and Oakland, Bay Area, police and attorneys heavily revised their proposed policy on the use of military equipment by the police department based on the American Friends Service Committee recommendations and community advocacy as well. So the policy that resulted added limits to the authorized uses of assault rifles, projectile launchers, tear gas, and also prohibited use of flashbangs when encountering a person in a mental health crisis. I've also found that studies, and this is very much referenced with the American Friends Service Committee Equipped for War report that came out last year. It's the Healing Justice Program that came out with that report. Studies have shown in this report that military equipment in the hands of police is disproportionately used against people of color. That it tends to make the police more violent and also increases community fear without increasing community safety. The law, what it does is brings a new level of transparency, accountability, and opportunity for community participation. So this is our chance, in my mind, to use our democracy for what it's supposed to be, you know, our participation in the decisions about how militarized we want our police to be. 481 requires all police and sheriff department to, number one, disclose military equipment and associated costs. Number two, propose a policy on the appropriate use of the equipment to city council to consider, which the police department did last April with council approving it. 14 out of 18 public speakers voiced opposition. Council approved it regardless. Number three, publish annual reports. The police have to publish annual reports on, for one thing, how the military equipment was used and why. For a second thing, summary of any complaints, concerns, audits, violations. And thirdly, the total annual cost for each type of military equipment, including the acquisition of it, the personnel costs. Training costs are huge for something like this. You know, imagine training every year as often as it needs to be done. All the recruits, the new people, and the older ones, keep them refreshed with all this, these varied types of military equipment. Those training costs are huge. Transportation of the equipment, storage, maintenance, upgrade, and also, crucially, from what source funds will be provided for the equipment in this upcoming calendar year, beginning April 4th, in a mere week and a half. So the Chief Aldridge, he's currently scheduled to do this on Tuesday, April 4th, at the open meeting, the regular Brown-acted council, City Council's 6 o'clock Tuesday meeting on April 4th, where we highly encourage public input. The council will review the policy and annual report and make the decision to renew it and approve the report or not. So it's a critical opportunity for us.
So, I
wonder if you want to jump in, Chris.
Yeah, Ann, I need to stop you there. I want to just do a little station business.
Sure.
So that you brought up so many things. So we just try to remember everything, and let's get back to it in a minute. Folks, this is KZFR Community Radio, and I want to thank some underwriters. Should have done this earlier, but I didn't. We are made possible by the Children's Choir of Chico presenting Spring Vibes, an evening of jazz with pianist Shigemi Minitaka, along with Amon Cowell on trumpet, Ethan Sweat on bass, Jake Hakarinen on drums. Joining them will be selections performed by Children's Choir of Chico's own Bel Canto and Bella Voce Ensemble at the Almendra Winery and Distillery on Sunday, April 2nd at 5 p.m. There will also be a light dinner, a live and silent auction, and more. Tickets at Eventbrite Chico. I'm not sure this is right. Let's say it's childrenschoirofchico.org and by Burchard Construction. Burchard is B-I-R-C-H-A-R-D. Providing custom remodels, new home and commercial building from foundation to finish, Burchard Construction, where the homeowner's input matters. Custom construction with beauty and function, bids, consultations, and employment opportunities at 864-5427 and at BurchardConstruction.com. So thanks to everybody who underwrites, and our spring pledge drive is going to start up in 2 weeks, so keep us in mind in the future here. But I just want to say this will be my last show in Women's History Month. I have not done a lot of women's history at all on this show, and I kind of regret it, but I also realize that it's so important just to keep doing this work. Like, we have women's history sitting right here in this room, three of us.
And you've taken care of it over the years very well, Chris.
We elders. I just want to play you a little song here from Ma Rainey. She was dubbed the Mother of the Blues, lived from 1886 to 1939. She bridged vaudeville and the authentic expression of Southern blues, influencing a generation of blues singers. She was a defiant, independent, and unapologetic bisexual woman. This is the Bad Luck Blues from 1923. So 100 years ago, this song was popular, and this amazing woman lived among us. Those of us, we weren't here yet, but in our grandparents' day. That turned out to be a different song, Yada Do, and it was 1924, so I'm always a little bit off on some things, but anyway, Ma Rainey. Thank you, everyone, who supports women's equality and women's justice for women of all women, not just cisgendered women. All right, so let's get back to this upcoming meeting that we're going to have on Tuesday, April 4th at 6 p.m. at the City of Chico Council meeting, which is where the policy for the it's called a policy 709 on military equipment is going to be re-upped, I'm afraid, with the council that we have. Now, let's go back and discuss what problems, Ann Polifka, I'm going to ask you this. I have in the studio with me Ann Polifka and Diane Suzuki from Concerns Community for Justice. Ann, can you tell us about what problems you identified last year with the Chico policy and how the City Council responded to the new law, which is, you've been talking about this, AB4, 481 was supposed to help help communities and citizens have a better relationship with the police because they would have more control over how this plays out with the militarization of our police. But let's specifically go into what happened last year, please.
Sure, Chris. It's very relevant what happened last year in March and April of 2022. Because of the fact that the kind of policy that was adopted last year, the inadequacies in it, it hasn't changed. All that citizen of Chico input at the council meetings, there were lots of people, 14 out of 18 people spoke in favor of the council, you know, making some changes in the policy. A lot of people rejected Policy 709 that Lexapol for-profit company came up with for the Chico Police Department. The council disregarded all those people and decided to approve Policy 709 on military equipment use. So we have the same issues now. But what we found with their boilerplate, Lexapro company boilerplate military equipment use policy, which is number 709 in the Chico Police Department manual, policy manual. People can look it up. That there are multiple deficiencies and multiple inadequacies in it. There was no significant community input either into policy 709. So one of the inadequacies that we found just looking at it, we reviewed it carefully. There's been a lot of work gone into reviewing it, legal specialists as well as just ordinary people like myself. One of the problems is that the Chico Police Department defines, in quotes, authorized users in place of authorized use. Authorized use is a section of the policy for each particular piece of equipment. Each particular piece has to have its authorized use in place. So, since the police department policy manual 709, instead of using authorized use and using authorized users instead, if they want to get lethal, the police can do it without any limits. It's very likely that new recruits will be trained on policy 709. So if we really want to have stellar behavior from police, the police department needs to have a stellar policy foundation. It's sort of a little bit, you know, to regular people like myself, I didn't see right away how that, well, I thought I conflated users with authorized use. But the only one that I saw, the only particular equipment piece in their policy 709 was actually the drones, what they call unmanned aerial systems. And under policy 709 authorized use section, it reads, they shall not be used in the following circumstances. And it outlines a number of circumstances in which drones are not to be used. And they also say that these unmanned aerial systems, these drones, shall never be weaponized. And I do wish, looking at the rest of policy 709 of the police department, that they, you know, with every single piece of military equipment, had said under what conditions they shall not be used, they shall never be used. What are the prohibitions of use? Because unfortunately, with most of those listed weapons in their policy, there are neither authorized nor unauthorized uses listed. And their equipment is pretty deadly. It's sniper rifles, submachine guns. And then it's also very scary. For instance, a person in a mental crisis, is it okay to use a flashbang, throw that into their immediate vicinity? Is that all right? There's no specification, no delineation of under what kinds of circumstances the police are able to use these particular persons.
Including children.
Exactly.
Can be in protest.
Exactly. Including children. If there's non-English speakers there's no delineation of what the police have to do as far as communication with those people. If there's people with physical disabilities, either. One of the pieces of equipment is called an LRAD, which is a term for long range. Oh gosh, what is it? It's a long range LRAD. I'm trying to remember the name for it now. Long range acoustic device. LRAD. They can cause actually long term hearing damage. They can cause pain that goes on for years and years. New York Police Department already has undergone litigation for LRAD effects. Successful litigation. In our point of view, Chico City has already put out enough money for litigation for the kinds of things that I feel a lot of resentment that us taxpayers have to pay for, and we don't need any more litigations for things like LRADs or anything else that the police department has as far as military equipment.
Could I jump in there right there about
fiscal
impacts?
Yeah.
Further into the policy 709.9, it reads, the maintenance of military use supply levels when the stocks of military equipment have reached significantly low levels or have been exhausted, the department may order the necessary equipment without city council approval to maintain essential availability for the department's needs. So, you know, it's just going to be ongoing costs to maintain these obsolete equipment. And so last year, Chief Aldrich, who's now chief, he was the coordinator of the military equipment use policy, and he made the report, the first report after AB 481, and said that the department's $25 million budget will cover all the maintenance of the equipment for replacement and repairs. That was in a Chico News and Review article. So, you know, they've got so much money, they can just keep this supply going. And and then there was a Bearcat, an armored vehicle that looks like a tank. It was acquired for $216,000, $216,000. And that the first Bearcat burned up by an electrical fire, and then they replaced it. But that was with insurance money, so I'm not sure if it came out of their budget. But so they replaced that one already. Then I wanted to just also just add on to about the who will be the victims of some of this. The ACLU had said that programs like this, the local police have used their SWAT teams more often, so they can use all this, you know, these equipments. And the ACLU said that, most of these raids are much more likely to hit predominantly black neighborhoods, as most of us already have witnessed in the news.
Right. And I just, for listeners, we are talking about an important city council meeting that's coming up, and I would like to have our guests talk a little bit about Tuesday, April 4th, and the talking points they want us to use and how we can step up. But also, one of the things that Diane just said about this Bearcat, I know there's been a lot of concern in the community about whether or not the police have acquired any depleted uranium, either in the bullets or in the Bearcat. And I looked it up, and it is not in the Bearcat. It's a steel-plated armored vehicle. So that is at least one thing that I don't think is an issue for our community, because, of course, the cancer and birth defect rates with depleted uranium are very, very scary. So let's start talking about April 4th and what we are planning to, not only what we want the community to do and some of the talking points that you think would be a good idea. Do you want to address that, Ann? Or?
Sure.
Okay.
Definitely. Key points. Military equipment is the antithesis of de-escalation. That's what I would like to bring up, and like people in the community to consider also. Studies have shown that police departments that have military equipment tend to use it. It results in increased community fear and violence with no real decrease in crime. No real decrease in crime. Another key point for us, talking point, prioritize city funding. This is to the city council, because they have the power to do this. City funding for crisis intervention, and the county actually as well, for the crisis intervention team, for it to go 24/7, because a lot of the problems that happen at night, and as far as I know now, it's not operating 24/7. The police are called upon to do work that really crisis intervention specialists, people with strong psych backgrounds, should be doing. Police aren't equipped to do it. They don't have the training to do it. Most of them are, many of the new recruits anyway, are really young, don't have the life experience to do that kind of thing. Anyway, prioritize city funding for crisis intervention team, also addiction treatment, and also real housing for homeless people. Many of the people that are without a home also have serious addiction problems or mental health issues. And like I say, the police are not really adequate to address those. Now, in terms of Chico Police Department, I think that we have to be aware of some of the propaganda that they're going to put out. And they're going to use, for instance, the excuse for military equipment that they have to use it in a very high risk, a very crisis situation like has happened, or to combat terrorism or something else, some very high risk situation. As a matter of fact, CPD has a higher arrest record, and this is from Police Scoreboard, for low-level offenses, a higher arrest record for low-level offenses, more officer misconduct and discrimination complaints, and more deadly force arrests than 80% of California police departments. So that's a big issue. I just wanted to mention one more little thing, and then I think, Diane, you probably have some key points to put in, too. The less lethal impact projectiles, some people have said that they're so much better. Their authorized use section, though, in Policy 709 goes, I quote, less lethal munitions may be used by those officers trained in their use in the following types of situations, but aren't limited to those situations. So they mention a few situations. The problem with it, and I think this is a point to bring up to the city council about the policy 709, the problem with it is it too broadly defines authorized use to be limitless, since the specific uses aren't really delineated at all, and the ambiguity leaves way too much to officer discretion, and it provides inadequate safeguards for the public welfare, the public rights and public liberties. So because of these inadequate checks on officer discretion, it too easily goes from there to unjustified homicides. And there's been too many unjustified, unnecessary police homicides in the country, and of course in our county, more than most counties in California, and they've all been deemed justified.
Right. So you want the community to show up on April 4th. What else, Diane, do you want to add to what Anne's just said about either the talking points or how we might conduct ourselves, or you know, anything that comes to mind about how we might be even remotely successful with this conservative city council that we have?
Well, to begin with, this does come up annually. It's mandated through AB 41. Mm-hmm. So whatever we say, it's going to last the year, and then we have another opportunity next year. But we did not mention yet that there is a community engagement meeting that's going to be led by Chief Aldridge. And that's part of AB 41, too, that they have to have at least two public meetings. And originally it was going to be before the city council meeting, but he did change it because he had the time as 1 o'clock, and we did ask for something at 6 o'clock so that more people can participate that work during the week. So then it ended up being after the city council meeting. It does not make sense, but so there are going to be two meetings that we encourage people to come to both. And so, of course, that Tuesday city council meeting, and then the second one is on Thursday, April 27th at 6 o'clock, also at the Chico City Council Chambers. And so you have two opportunities to make your statement, but come to both. Mm-hmm. And make your points and make new points, you know. We do have talking points for people, like Ann started with. We'll have some copies that you can look at. And there are so many. We have a list of 20, but there's 100 reasons why we do not need military equipment in our town.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that people listening to this show will step up and get involved in this. And if you can't physically be there, you can do a letter to the city council people. Mm-hmm. I did one last night.
Thank you.
As a result of all the wonderful material you guys have developed over the last 2 years. I was able to write a fairly cogent letter to the editor. So I feel like this is an area that we can be involved in. And Debbie Presson is the city clerk, and if you just write to her, she will send it to the city councilors, so you don't have to go in there and know each of their emails. Go ahead, Diane.
Well, and then we have another ask for people to ask the city council, and we strongly recommend that the final approval of Policy 709 take place after Chief Aldridge holds that community engagement meeting on the 27th of April, mm-hmm. so that they actually hear us two times, here's the community, mm-hmm. and then they make their final decision. I mean, that's the democratic process. Come on.
Yeah, that would be good. So you said that Aldridge was the former coordinator. Who is the coordinator now? They are required to have a military equipment coordinator within the police department.
He's still in that position until he can designate someone else. Keep, I mean, he just came into being the chief just a couple months ago.
Yeah, and they keep drawing from their own ranks, so the culture never changes. We don't get any new blood here in Chico, so that's kind of an unfortunate thing.
Yeah.
But I want to end this segment with you because I have some announcements, but I also want to, I want people to be able to read your work because the website is quite excellent. And how do they find out more to get involved? I know you're a small group and you need more of you doing this. And, this work is essential in terms of keeping our community safe from overuse of force by our police and to move the culture, move the dial here away from, how it's been. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Our website is www.ccforjchico.org. We also have a Facebook page you can go to and a Twitter account. That's ccforjchico.
Okay. And hang on for just a second. I just want to make my announcements, and maybe there might be a thought that comes up that you'll want to add. So, first of all, Playing Dead is going to be coming up at 1 o'clock, and Ray Lager is here getting ready to do a great show for you, so stay tuned for that. There are four important things coming up I wanted to let the community know about. Tomorrow there is going to be the general meeting of the Chico Peace Alliance at 10:30 at the Chico Friends Meeting House at 16th and Hemlock. All are welcome to come to that, and we're going to hear a report about Palestine from Jim Anderson and Janet Leslie, who have gone to Israel, Palestine many, many times, very concerned about human rights in Palestine. So please come out for our general meeting and see how you can get involved in peace work in Chico. Second, I wanted to let you know that former coordinator of the Peace and Justice Center, Dan Galpern, is back in town just for the day. He is the executive director and general counsel at Climate Protection and Restoration Initiative. They are suing the EPA about his failure on climate protection. You can find out more about his organization at cprclimate.org, but he will be in Chico. This is a really important opportunity to get involved in something that's a big, big case. Monday, the 27th, he will be at the South Chico Assistance Center on Park Avenue at 7 p.m. So Dan Galpern will be in town. And then I wanted to let you know that there's something on PBS that we can all watch. It is also streaming. If you don't have PBS, you can just go to PBS. American Experience is what it is. It's called Movement and the Madmen, and it talks about the success of the peace movement in stopping Richard Nixon from using nuclear weapons back in 1969, I think it was. Anyway, this is an important film, and I hope you'll watch it. It's 9 p.m. on the 28th. On TV. Then, Chico Peace Alliance is sponsoring or presenting the movie Threads. This is a 1984 remake of a film that was made during the height of the previous global nuclear tension. It shocked viewers all over the planet. It remains one of the most acclaimed and shattering movies of all time. It's very difficult to watch. It's a docudrama depicting the unraveling of society after a town in UK undergoes nuclear attack. And it is because of the threat of nuclear conflict that we want people to realize the importance of activating now to prevent a nuclear war between the United States and Russia. This is unforgettable viewing, and it's a free screening at 2 p.m. Presented by the Chico Peace Alliance at the Pageant Theater. We thank them for letting us do this on April Fool's Day. So come out 2 p.m. to a free movie. Okay, so we do have another minute. Let's get back. I really treasure these two guests. I really appreciate that you were able to join me in the studio today. Do you have any last words, Ann Palifka or Diane Suzuki, about this upcoming city council possible approval of a police militarization policy for this year?
Sure, I do. First of all, I want to address, though, my comment to the public at large, because we're the ones that, in a democracy, really should have the say. And Jimmy's song right at the beginning, it's a long struggle for justice. Things can change. That's what we have to know, believe, and work for. I wrote it down because that's what's been keeping me going, knowing that it's a long struggle. It's not going to be a quick get this over and done with, and, oh, the city council, you know, batted our request down, so let's give up and go home with our tails between our legs. No, it's not like that if we're really interested in being members of a true democracy. So I would encourage people, and I encourage myself as well, to keep this up, to write letters to the editor on the topic, to educate ourselves. Go to the CC4J website that Diane gave earlier. Go to the Healing Justice of the American Friends Service Committee website also for more information. And speak with others in your social groups, your neighbors, the community service organizations, or faith groups that you might be a part of. Encourage each other. That's what I would suggest. And, you know, especially encourage, I would say, in terms of prioritization with the city council, that proportionately much more money from the city budget go towards the meeting of real human needs. And some of those are housing, people that are homeless, people that are low income, addiction and mental health treatment and care, a crisis intervention team that goes 24/7, not just, you know, part of that. So those are basic needs. Fixing the roads, that came up a lot yesterday in a Chamber of Commerce meeting. Okay, thank you, Chris. Now, Diane.
I just want to leave you with one line. The residents of Chico are not at war, and we don't need to be policed by officers in military gear with military weapons.
Thank you to you both. I really appreciate your activism and your wisdom. Thank you. All right, so stay tuned for Playing Dead, folks. I want to thank our underwriters. We want to thank Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star, using locally sourced products to support our community agriculture. Sunday Jazz Brunch returns to Farm Star with live music from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m., along with breakfast pizzas and mimosas at 2359 The Esplanade in Chico. Open every day for lunch and dinner. Details on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. And by the Butte Environmental Council hosting the Endangered Earth event on April 22nd in downtown Chico. The event kicks off at 9 a.m. in Children's Park with the Walk for Earth and Rally, followed by a variety of climate action projects around Butte County. At 5 p.m., it's the Environmental Community Gathering at the Rose Garden, 545 Valombrosa Avenue, with music, refreshments, informational booths, demonstrations, and activities for all ages. Find out more at becknet.org, and thank you everybody for being with us on the Peace and Justice program. Listen in next Friday at noon for another episode of the Peace and Justice program. Here is your community calendar. Peace to all of you, I hope, and love to especially the Trouse Johnson family right now. Peace.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Mark Baker. Tonight will be the opening reception for Bikepedia, a new exhibition at the Museum of Northern California Art from 6 to 8 p.m. Bikepedia will feature original artwork with bicycles as primary or secondary subject matter. The exhibition will feature all media, including art made from bicycles. The Museum of Northern California Art is located at 900 Esplanade in Chico. For more information, visit monca.org. On Saturday will be a free food distribution from 2 to 4 p.m. at the South Chico Community Assistance Center. The South Chico Community Assistance Center holds free food distributions every second and fourth Saturday. The South Chico Community Assistance Center is located at 1805 Park Avenue in Chico. On Sunday, the Sierra Club will host a day hike at Table Mountain. Participants will hike for a total distance of 7 to 8 miles, visiting Beetson Canyon and Coal Canyon and seeing at least 5 waterfalls. Bring lunch, water, sunscreen, boots, and money for drivers. Hikers will meet at the Chico Park and Ride at 7:30 a.m. or at the Table Mountain parking lot at 8:15 p.m. Rain will cancel the hike. Hiking requires purchase of a day land pass from the state of California at ca.wildlifelicense.com/internet sales. The hike leader is Alan, who can be reached at ajmendoza@prodigy.net. And all this week is the 18th annual Prom Project. The Prom Project provides free prom attire for students in need. Dresses, shoes, suits, jewelry, and more. The Prom Project is open Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. and on Saturday from 10 to 4 p.m.